Good morning, everybody. Welcome to GFBS, Grand Forks Best Source. And of course, you're watching The Hidden Agenda. I'm Paul, filling in for John. He's on assignment. He'll be back next week. But before we get things started, today's show is brought to you by Churchill Shoes.
Churchill Shoes has moved. One of the largest SaaS dealers in the upper Midwest is now in the Grand Cities Mall and ready to find you a pair of shoes that you will love. At Churchill Shoes, they measure both feet to make sure you're getting the proper fit. They carry men's and women's styles and offer free special orders when shoes aren't in stock and free in-town delivery. Churchill Shoes has operated in Grand Forks for over 65 years and over 75 years of shoe fitting experience on their staff and can cater to all of your footwear needs. Open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5 and Saturday from 9 to 3. Call 701-772-8256 or online at churchillshoesnd.com. Next time you're in need of footwear, give us a try. Your feet will be glad you did. Churchill Shoes in the Grand Cities Mall.
All right, everybody. And also, go check out Churchill Shoes. Chuck is retiring after 75 years, so he's having a big closing sale, and that will be going through May. So get over to Churchill Shoes right here in the Grand Cities Mall.
Unless everything sells out this month.
Yeah, yeah, because it is first come, first serve for the inventory that's left.
Wow, I'm handing over right after the show.
Yeah, Dean just got a pair today too. So
that's nice.
Yeah,
nice. Approval. Comfortable?
Oh yeah, heck yeah.
Fit? Yeah, that's good. And they're made in the USA, right?
San Antonio,
Texas. Yep. Can't beat that. Wow. It doesn't get any better than that. When you're looking for shoes, they're comfortable and they fit and they're made in the U.S. Oh, and by the way, just a slight thing. I was talking with the fellow at the shoe repair place, the shoe repair here in the mall.
Yep.
And I asked him, are those well-made shoes? He said, oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll last you like 10 years before they even have to be, you know, have a new sole put on. I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By quality.
Buy quality, and you don't have to buy it again.
Yep, exactly.
That's how it works.
And if anybody is listening that can't see us, obviously we are joined by David Waterman. And
Mr. Hi, that's me.
Yep, that's David. Yeah, yeah. I got to remember to push these buttons here, too, and make sure the cameras are on the right people.
Right.
Well, I suppose in the tradition, we should kick this thing off with jokes my neighbor tells me.
Yes. I'm
pretty sure I got two that are pretty, well, I'll let you decide. All right, where did I have them on here? Oh, okay. So I only know 25 letters of the alphabet. I don't know why.
That's good.
Is that a good one?
Okay. I like that. Yes, I like that.
Let's see what you think of this one.
You could tell that in any company.
Yeah.
That's good.
I used to be addicted to soap, but I'm clean now. Dean, give that, it the
he gave
seal
it a,
of
first
he,
thumbs up.
He gave it a kind of leaning. Yeah, okay. right.
All right. Well, so. For just you know, a couple of little quick news things. Obviously, we had the State of the Union last weekend from Donald Trump's successor. That was quite something. And then, the title of today's show, Nobody Forgets What They Don't Know. So why don't you tell us what's going on with that, David?
Well, what is going on? Paul, how are you doing?
Good.
You look good. Where'd you get that hat?
This is from Executive Properties.
Ah, okay. Yep. Hence the EP on the front.
Yep.
Okay. Good. Well, there's this thing that people have been saying. From the river to the sea, these people who... I've got a new phrase that I'm going to put on a T-shirt. I just came up with this morning. From the river to the sea, how clueless can you be?
That's actually pretty good.
Do you like that?
Yeah, you should get that on a shirt.
I'm putting that on a shirt, yes. And so that... And they've... And I've heard that multiple people have gone on campuses and talked to these people who are saying that and saying, so which river... I don't know. These are the people chanting it. Mm-hmm. Which sea? I don't know. They have no idea what they're saying. They don't know what the conflict is. They don't know who's in it. They just hear this thing and they get all riled up and they're really clueless. So What it is, it's anti-Semitism, and they're talking about that phrase, from the river to the sea, literally is a phrase of not just anti-Semitism, but that's a phrase of wipe out all the Jews. I mean, that's really what it means. That it is the, you know, Israel is accused of being genocidal. They're not at all. But the phrase from the chant from the river to the sea, that's a genocidal phrase. They want to destroy every single Jew, not just in Israel, but eventually in the rest of the world as well. Those folks, Hamas and their ilk, want to go after the, you know, Iran calls Israel the little Satan. Who's the big Satan to them?
So,
if Israel's the little Satan, who's the big Satan?
America?
Yes, America. That's right. The United States. So they want to, as one of their people said, we'll take care of the Saturday people today, because Jews worship on Saturday, and the Sunday people tomorrow. Let's see, who would that be? The Sunday people. Who would that be? Oh yeah, that's us too.
Yep.
Right. So anyway, the thing is, anti-Semitism is nothing new. So I think, you know, there was somebody. So what's the title of the show again today? It's
Nobody Forgets What They Don't Know.
Nobody Forgets What They Don't Know. So there's a saying that's been passed down for a couple of generations. A guy born in 1863 who said, "Those who can't remember the past are condemned to repeat it." So I'm just going to ask everyone in the room, who said that? The quote is, "Those who can't remember the past are condemned to repeat it." Born in 1863. Any takers? That's when this gentleman was born. He is a philosopher. He was an atheist, but even an atheist was able to figure this out. "Those who can't remember the past are condemned to repeat it." Who said it?
George Santayana?
Yeah, George Santayana. Good job. Yay, give it to Paul. He got it.
Yeah, hold on.
George, there it is. Yeah. Yeah, George Santayana said that. And many people have said some version of that. "Those who fail to learn from the past are condemned to repeat it." And what he's talking about is, because history, there's a Steve Taylor, the songwriter, called it the sex of history. In other words, history repeats itself, right? It reproduces itself. And if you don't learn from bad things that happened to people in the past, they're going to happen to us too, because bad people learn the tricks that work. And so they just repeat them over and over and over again. And so that is true. It's always been true. As the Bible says, there's nothing new under the sun. So what does this have to do with today? Well, there are things that are going on in the world today that have happened before. And one of them is the thing that's happening in the Middle East. All these accusations made against Israel, all the hatred against the Jewish people, and they've dealt with that for thousands of years. And, you know, the question is, why is that happening? But I think that it's important to kind of reflect on some of the other things that have happened in history. Let's go back, and you can maybe recall your Sunday school. Look, you know what? The Bible is two things. It's a book of history, and it's also a book of the future, right? It's history past and history not yet to come, right? So God sees everything on this world from beginning to end in a moment of time, right? He sees it all the same way that we see what's in front of us today. So nothing's a mystery to him. And so he's revealed it to us through men that we call prophets. God spoke to them, said, "Write this down, say this message to these people," and those things were prepared for our benefit. So we can consider the Bible as the holy word of God, which it is, but we can also consider it the most accurate history book ever written, because it also is. By the way, here's my copy. This is my favorite version of the Bible, given by my brother when I graduated from UND in 1988. And I love this. I love this book because it reveals so much. This book has been attacked more than any book in the world. You know that? There have been more people who've attacked the Bible than any book in the world. And they've said it's not historical, it's not factual, it's not relevant, and they've always been proven wrong every time. Every single time, archaeological discoveries have proven, oh, I guess there really was a city of Nineveh. Oh, I guess there really was. Oh, I guess there really was a king. We said there was no such king as Hezekiah, but apparently now they just found an inscription to King Hezekiah, right? So it's always proven to be right, so we can trust it. So I want to ask you, gentlemen, if you'll think back, there was an Old Testament prophet who, for no fault of his own, was thrown into a den of lions. Can anybody remember the name of that Old Testament prophet? He was not an old man, by the way. He was in the Old Testament. He was not an old man himself. But he was thrown into the den of lions because, we're going to get into that in just a minute.
Talking about Daniel?
Daniel, very good. Yes. Second one, ding, 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 ding. We get another one for, that's two right in a row for Mr. Paul. Thank you very much. Daniel was throwing it. So let me just go, and the reason that this is relevant is because Daniel was what? I'm going to give you a choice. Daniel was Ethiopian. I'm going to give this multiple choice. Daniel was Ethiopian. He was from Australia. Or China, or he was Jewish. Which of those four? Ethiopian, Chinese, African, or Jewish?
I'm going to go with Jewish.
Jewish. Man, Paul, you are like just, striking.
Just hitting 100.
on all batting cylinders. 100. You are batting 100. That's right. He was a Jew, and he was a Jewish man who God spoke through and used and gifted greatly. So here's the question. I've got one more question about the Lion's Den thing, but first, a little introduction. I'm going to go to Daniel chapter, starting in chapter 1, just to kind of set the backdrop for what's going on. And I love, one of the things I love about the Old Testament is that I get to say Old Testament names, which are a lot of fun. So in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, this is, so just put on your history cap now, your history thinking cap, and let this picture get painted in your mind. Third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king who was the king of Judah, which is part of Israel, the king of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. So he attacked Jerusalem. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into his hand. So Jehoiakim was the king of Judah. Judah had sinned against God. And when Judah, whenever Israel, whenever God's people sin against him, God, he's patient for a period of time. He rebukes them. He'll send prophets. He'll say, you've got to repent and turn and go back and do the, stop worshiping false gods and come back to me. And then they often don't do it. They don't listen. And so God will punish them and he'll bring in some other king or some group of band of raiders and they'll get taken over for a while. And then God will deliver them again, and once they start straightening up and flying right. And so this happened multiple times. It's kind of like your kids, right? You tell them, don't do that, and then they do it, and then you bring them out, and you swat their bottom, and you send them back, and then they're good for a while. And then after they forget the pain of the little swat, they start acting up again, and you have to repeat the process, right? This happens. When our kids were born, we said, we're going to spank them one time, and they're good for life, right? They'll never have to be ever disciplined again.
Doesn't work that way.
No, that's right. It doesn't work that way with our children, and doesn't work that way with God's children either, because we all tend to want to do our own thing and not listen to the one who's in charge. In this case, God is in charge of everything. So without getting into the background, God gave Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, who's the king of Babylon. And along with some of the vessels of the house of God, that would be the temple. And so he, meaning Nebuchadnezzar, brought them into the land of Shinar, into the house of his God, which is a pagan god. And he brought vessels into the treasury of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials. You like that name? Ashpenaz? Have you thought of naming any of your children Ashpenaz?
No, that one didn't cross my mind.
It didn't? Okay, all right. Just asking.
Oshkosh B'gosh.
Okay. So he ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family and of the nobles, the youths in whom there was no deal. So this is Nebuchadnezzar telling his chief, his chief of his officials, he's saying, go get some of those young men, those Jewish men, the ones who are good looking, who show intelligence in every branch of wisdom, and who are endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, and have the ability for serving in the king's court. And he ordered them, teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans, because that was the land that Nebuchadnezzar was from. That's right, they're Chaldeans. So he's saying, teach them our literature, our history, and our language, because they're going to serve me. So that's the order that he gives to Ashpenaz. And the king appointed for them a daily ration of food from the king's choice food. So they're getting the best. And from the wine which he drank. And he appointed that they should be educated for 3 years. And at the end of that 3 years, they're to enter the king's personal service. These are like his personal advisors now. So here's the problem. What the king called choice food might not have... Well, it clearly wasn't choice food to these young men who were Jews, who had the Torah. They have the word of God. They have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and in the Levitical law, they're taught there's certain foods that they're not to eat. Like you know that Jews can't eat pork, for example. Yeah,
that's what I was just about to say.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So if the king has got a big pig farm, and they're cutting up pork bellies and having all kinds of bacon strips on their stuff, that doesn't work for these young men. So here's who they were. They were Daniel, the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So it's those four. Then the commander of the officials assigned new names to them. To Daniel, he assigned the name Belteshazzar. So Daniel's now going to be called Belteshazzar because they're trying to, turn him into Chaldeans, basically, because they're working for Nebuchadnezzar. Belteshazzar, Hananiah became Shadrach, Mishael became Meshach, and Azariah became a bad Negro. Just kidding. His name was Abednego. But when I was a kid growing up, that's what we thought they said, a bad Negro. Well, that's weird. No, Abednego was his name. So when we have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And what's interesting is that if you go to Sunday school and you listen, you'll hear them all referred to by the names that they were given by Nebuchadnezzar's chief of officials, except for Daniel. You rarely hear Daniel referred to as Belteshazzar. We still call him Daniel. In fact, the book Daniel was named after Daniel, and it says Daniel, not Belteshazzar. But the rest, we call Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or wine, which the king drank. And so he asked permission from the commander not to eat that food, which would defile him before God.
Why couldn't he have the wine?
Because so wine wasn't just like the wine that we drink. They add things to the wine, spices and different things, and it probably wasn't prepared properly. So he just wasn't going to defile himself. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. And it's quite possible that, the Old Testament actually says don't look at wine when it sparkles in the cup. In other words, once it's become fermented enough to be alcoholic. Wine, we see wine in Scripture all over the place, right? Wine, there's wine. Wine is a big, important part of Jewish life. But the word that we use, that we translate wine, is translated from the word oinos. In the Scripture, it's called oinos, and it literally means the fruit of the vine. So the fruit of the vine, this is not the fruit of the vine, this is something else. But the fruit of the vine could be fermented or it could be fresh. So what we call grape juice in biblical times was called oinos. And what we call wine in biblical times was called oinos. So it was the same exact name, whether it was fermented or non-fermented. And I'm just making an assumption, I'm making a guess that this wine that the king drank was fermented in a way that these men were going to say, no, that's wine is sparkling in the cup. God says not to drink that, so I'm not going to drink that.
They should have just called it purple drink.
He could have... So now there's a problem, because this commander has been ordered to give Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, also known as Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, he's been ordered to give them the king's choice food. But these men are saying, we're not going to eat that. We're not eating the king's choice food. So the commander responds by saying, I'm afraid of my lord the king, who's appointed your food and your drink. Why should he see your faces looking more haggard than the youths who are your own age? Then you'd make me forfeit my head to the king. That's a nice way of saying, he'll cut my head off if he sees you guys not looking good compared to the other youths who are eating his choice food. So Daniel says to the overseer, please test your servants for 10 days. For 10 days, let us be given some vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be observed in your presence and in the appearance of the youths who are eating the king's choice food, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So, okay, here's the test. You give us vegetables and water, give those guys the choice food, and after 10 days, look at us, look at them, and you decide. So the official says, okay, that's good. He says, he listened to them in this matter, and he tested them for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, their appearance seemed to be better, and they were fatter. Well, the word fatter means fat of flesh, so they actually could have looked stronger, right, than the youths that had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and wine, and he kept giving them vegetables. Okay? So that's the setup. These men have distinguished themselves, these four, as men who are not going to defile themselves, even if it means risking their lives. They're going to obey God. So they've already established that's who they are. They're going to do things the way that God said to them. And so now listen, is the next, we'll go 17 through 21, and then we'll get into the really good stuff. As for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. And at the end of the days, which the king had commanded, had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar, who's the king. So that's 3 years. That's almost 1,000 days. That's a little over 1,000 days. And the king talked with them, and out of all of them, not one was found. So he talked with all the youths that had been trained, and out of all of them, not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. And as for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king had consulted them, in other words, the king goes, says, hey, come here. Look at this. Here's the situation. What do you think I should do here? And these youths, these young men, answer the king in his own language. And he says he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conquerors who were in his realm. 10 times better, these four Jewish men, young men. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. Okay, so now there's stuff that goes on with Nebuchadnezzar, and he has a dream, and then there's this thing with this fiery furnace, and that's all really good stuff. But we're gonna pass by that. Then Nebuchadnezzar ends up, God strikes him, and he becomes like an animal for a while and lives in the wilderness and grows claws. And anyway, that's not a good day for Nebuchadnezzar. But he eventually figures out, and he honors God. And then he gives his kingdom over to Belshazzar, not Belteshazzar. Belteshazzar is the name that was given to Daniel. But Nebuchadnezzar has a son whose name is Belshazzar, and he's a very wicked man. And God deals with him, and Belshazzar is killed. So then a new king takes over. Do you know who that king is? Any clue who this king who takes over, by the way, is the king that ends up throwing Daniel in the lion's den. Do you want to wait and do a break and make everybody wait on pins and needles to hear who the name of the king is?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. All right.
All right. Well, you know what time it is then? You know that there is nothing better than treating yourself to some good homemade baked goods, and that's where Over Heaven's Cakes comes in. You'll find the best cupcakes and cakes for any special occasion or just a treat. Walk in to find out more, but I'm warning you, you won't want to leave. Hope for Heaven's Cakes, located in the north backside of the Grand Cities Mall. They're open Tuesday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Saturdays from 9 a.m. to noon. Give them a call at 701-757-CAKE. That's 701-757-2253. Or email them at oforheavenscakes@yahoo.com. Be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins at O for Heaven's Cakes in the Grand Cities Mall. All right. Well, we're going. Yeah. Now we're back.
That stuff's delicious.
And just for reminders for everybody, the title of today's show is Nobody Forgets What They Don't Know. And so, since we kept you all in suspense, I am going to go with, let's see if I can pronounce this correctly, King Darius.
King Darius. That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, Paul does it again. King Darius. So, Darius was the...
Was it Darius or Darius?
Well, I guess it depends on who you ask. Okay. Right? Some might say Darius and some would say Darius.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Tomato, potato, but right. So I say Darius because it's just easier. It probably was Darius. It was probably Darius or something like
that. Oh, yeah.
But I'm not going to say it like that, right? So Darius becomes the king. And I think that he's kind of observed what's going on. He was 62, by the way, when he became king. Darius was 62. And so he knows about Daniel. And by the way, I want you to know, I want either one of you to stop me at any moment and ask if something's not clear or you have or you're just curious about something, just stop me and ask. Because there might be, if you have a question about something that someone who's watching or listening probably has the same question, and I might have not thought of it, so please do that. So, and your question, it might occur to you to say, what does this have to do with anything going on today, much less what's happened in Israel? And I hope that will become clear by the time I get to the end of this story.
Okay.
It seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they should be in charge of the whole kingdom.
What traps?
Satraps. A satrap is a governor of a particular province. And the satraps, usually they had a pretty good degree of autonomy. So it's a bit, so here's the kingdom. This is the Babylonian, so it's basically Babylon, right?
Okay.
And this is the Babylonian Empire in from 606 to 536 BC, which happens to be, this is the time of Daniel. This is the time when Daniel, when this stuff was going on with Daniel, this is what the Babylonian Empire looked like. So this is where Nebuchadnezzar had come in and had expanded and conquered all these territories. So here's Turkey up here. They've got half of Turkey. Iran is over here. They've got half that. All of Iraq, well, part of Iran anyway, all of Iraq. Syria's up here. That was part of the Babylonian Empire. Saudi Arabia's down here. They've got part of that. Egypt was over here. They cut into Egypt. So this was a massive empire. This was really big. And this is the area. So that's why he's got 120 satraps or provincial governors. It spread throughout all of Babylonia. Yeah,
I thought you were referring to like a trap. That's why I was confused. I was like...
A sand trap. Yes. Well, I guess Darius was known to, you know, hit a few golf balls from time to time, and so there may have been sand traps there. I don't know if they had them back then. If they did, it was a really big one, like Saudi Arabia. That's a huge sand trap. But anyway,
that was a hard one to avoid.
This is so Babylonia is a huge place, right? And Babylon is the capital, but Babylonia is massive, and So he needed people to help him run his kingdom. Here's Israel, by the way. This is roughly the borders of Israel right here. This line right here, that'd be Israel. But he's taken over. So even though this is the land that actually the real borders of Israel would have gone all the way over here to the Euphrates River and down here and then up here. But it doesn't matter because Nebuchadnezzar took over all that area. So all this is under his rule. God gave Judah and Israel into Nebuchadnezzar's hand because of their disobedience to him. And so now they're occupying Israel, right?
Okay.
I'm going to use the word occupation. Just had to get that in there. So it seemed good to Darius to appoint 120 of these guys, these provincial governors called satraps, that they should be in charge of the whole kingdom. And over them was three commissioners. So three commissioners who were in charge of 120 satraps. And one of the commissioners was Daniel. So these satraps, so the satraps are accountable to all the commissioners, including Daniel, so that the king might not suffer any loss. So these satraps have a certain level of control, but they've got to answer to the commissioners so they don't start feathering their own nest, so to speak, right? out of whatever the king would have allowed. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the other two commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Okay, so here's this Jewish kid. He's, who knows, probably his early, I'm guessing, in his early 20s at this point, maybe mid-20s. And he's the star. Because why? Because God gave him the ability to discern dreams and to have this tremendous wisdom. And the king sees it and he goes, hey, I like this guy. This guy, you know what? Maybe instead of having three commissioners, I'll just need one and just put Daniel in charge of everything. That wouldn't be unlike what happened with Joseph. But anyway, that's a different story.
I'm sure the other two didn't appreciate that.
You know what? You're exactly right, Paul. And so here's what happened. Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to the government, regard to government affairs. But they couldn't find any ground of accusation or evidence of corruption because he was faithful. So Daniel serves his God, but in order to serve God, he says, I'm going to serve this king and do what's right for him. And so he was honest. He had integrity. And as he was faithful, it says, no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Can you imagine what America would be like today if it was run by someone who had no negligence or corruption?
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Be a huge...
Going back to the State of the Union last week.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. You know, I couldn't watch it.
I got about 35 minutes in, and then I finally had to just turn it off. I just couldn't take it anymore. It was like looking into the sun.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. It's painful. It's painful to do that. Yeah. So I couldn't. If it was a comedy or if it was a movie, then I could watch it. But knowing that there are real people who believe in what he says, I said, oh, I can't. So Daniel, here's this man who's been gifted by God and given an extraordinary spirit. He's got no corruption, faithful, no negligence or corruption was found in him. Then these other men said, we shall not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. So they hatch a plan. They hatch a plan. And here's their plan. These commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king. They come to King Darius and they say, King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps and the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. So here are all his officials, all the people that he's trusted his kingdom with, and they're coming to him and they're saying, King, live forever. You are great. And we've gotten together and we think this is a good thing. This is what you need to do, O king. 30 days, no one makes petition to any god or man besides you. And if they do, boom, into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document. They've got it all written up in advance, ready for him to sign, right? Establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. That's true. In that day, the law of the Medes and the Persians was such that once the king had made an order, had given an injunction, written a law, and said, this is the way it's going to be by order of the king. Who came up with this? I don't know. It couldn't be changed. Once the king signed it and sent it out, it couldn't be changed. Not even the king could change. The king could say, oops, just kidding. He couldn't say, I changed my mind. I don't want to do that anymore. We're going to do it this way now. No. Once the king has issued it, it's law, period. No changing. No do-overs. It's a done deal. So, therefore, King Darius signed the document. That is the injunction. He signed it. Now, why is that a problem? Who wants to take a guess why that might be a problem for Daniel? Okay, here's the injunction. No one can make a petition, can make a request of any man or any god other than King Darius, who was, to many people, God on earth. They thought he was like God. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, king, sign this injunction. And the king says, wow, you all agreed on it. Well, all of us, right? They said, we all agreed. So that would include Daniel. And the king trusted Daniel. So Daniel must have been on it as well, because they said that it was like unanimous, right? Mm-hmm. So the king signs it. Now, why is that a problem for Daniel? Any takers?
Because of his faith.
So what would his faith impel him to do? What would he be compelled to do because of his faith? His faith in who? In King Darius? His faith in who or what? Faith's got to be in God.
Yeah.
His faith in God. His faith in the God of the Bible. Right. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Right. The same God that Christians worship. That's God, the God of the universe. Yeah, so that's a problem. Why? Well, we'll find out. Here's why. Daniel knew that the document was signed, then he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. By the way, he's not in a foreign land. He's probably in Babylon, the capital city. But he has his window open towards Jerusalem, which is his home. And he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Previous to what? Previous to that time, which means that that's his practice. He just did that. 3 times a day, he went up, he got down, he knelt towards Jerusalem, and he prayed to God. He gave thanks, and he prayed to God. And guess what? The windows open. Satraps, another governor, other commissioners had seen him doing this before. They knew he did that. They knew it was his practice. And that's why they said, we shall not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. They knew that Daniel prayed to his God. They knew that he prayed daily. And they said, if we can get Darius to sign this injunction, what Daniel's doing will become illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be thrown in the lion's den. That's a great plan, right?
Yeah.
Well, they thought so. So he prays, he gives thanks before his God, as he's been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. By the way, he was probably praying, among other things, he was probably praying for King Darius and for the kingdom, because he's working for Darius. So he's faithful to him. So he's probably praying for King Darius. He's probably praying that maybe King Darius at some point would turn and believe in the God of the universe, right?
Well, if Darius dies, does the law go away?
If he died within the first 30 days, because this was just a 30-day law, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just 30 days. It's limited to 30 days. Yeah, what would happen if he died in the middle of 30 days? Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe it probably would go away because nobody can come to Darius anymore, mm-hmm. right? And so the petition says that for 30 days, anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, will be thrown in the lion's den. So if the king's dead, then they couldn't anymore. But once 30 days is over, once the month is passed, then it's no longer a law. It's a temporary law. But they knew that that would be long enough.
So basically they wanted Daniel to not be able to do his prayer for 30 days.
Exactly.
Okay.
But they trusted because they knew that he was a righteous man. They knew that he believed in God. They knew that God had gifted him. They knew that he wasn't going to not do that. Mm-hmm. And that if he didn't do it, so here's the thing. So Daniel's stuck because if he prays to God during those 30 days, they can accuse him and say he violated the law of King Darius. If he doesn't pray to God during those 30 days, now they can accuse him before his people and say, look, he doesn't even pray. He neglected to pray to his God the way that he's commanded to do. So either way, he's in trouble.
Yep.
Right? But he wasn't in trouble because Daniel was obedient to God, not to men. So when Daniel knew the document was signed, he climbed to his, he prayed. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. So they literally burst into his house, into his room, and see him doing that. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. You can just see these guys, right? We got him now.
Got the gotcha moment.
It's the gotcha moment. And they go to the king and they say, did you not sign an injunction? And they're innocent, right? King, did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? Didn't you pass that injunction, O king? And the king answered and said, the statement is true according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah. He's that Jew, the Jew. He pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. As soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed. He was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. The king loved Daniel, and he trusted Daniel. And he realized at that point that he'd been tricked. Mm-hmm. But he signed the document. He signed the injunction according to the Medes and the Persians that he's got to be thrown into the lion's den. And so he's doing everything that he can to come up with some way of undoing it. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that there is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. They can see the king wearing himself out to figure out, how do I get Daniel out of this? I got to do something. Remember, O king, remember. Now he's really in trouble. Then the king gave orders. And Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. Then the king spoke and said to Daniel, listen to this. This is a pagan king. And he calls out to Daniel, who's just been thrown into the lion's den, and he says, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. So a stone is brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet ring of his nobles so that nothing might be changed in regard to Daniel. King's got to follow his own law. So he seals it. He puts a stone there, seals it. His nobles seal it. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. Wouldn't eat a thing. And no entertainment was brought before him. And his sleep fled from him. He spent all night worrying about Daniel. We don't know if he prayed or if he didn't pray. All night long, he's worried about Daniel. Then the king arose with the dawn at the break of day. At the break of day, the moment the sun comes up, he went in haste to the lion's den. And when he come near to the den, to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? And then Daniel spoke to the king. O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also toward you, O king, I have committed no crime. Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den. No injury whatever was found on him because he had trusted in his God.
Well, couldn't he have just pulled him out of the den like right away? Just threw him in and took him out?
apparently not. Nope, he couldn't do that. But
there was like a 24-hour term in
he
terms
had
and
to
limits
be thrown in and had to be closed. The stone had to be put on there and sealed so that the lions could do their worst. And that's what happened, except the lions didn't do their worst because Daniel says that God sent an angel. But it's not over yet. The king knew that these men who had tricked him into signing this law, specifically so that Daniel would be torn limb from limb by these lions. Now it's their turn. The king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. It's not a good idea to go against God or his people. Then Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in the land, "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all..." Here's his other decree. "I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who also has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So that's history. God delivered Daniel. And earlier, God delivered Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We don't have time to go into that story right now. It's a fantastic story, which you might remember as well. But the question is, what can we learn from this? What can we... Here these people are... they're a conquered people. Right? The Jews have been conquered by Nebuchadnezzar and made part of Babylonia. This whole region has been taken over, and now this whole region is being run by Darius, and then later by Cyrus. Daniel is the one enduring force for all of them. He was brought up by Nebuchadnezzar, survived Belshazzar, survived Darius, and then Cyrus, because he honored God, who was his ultimate king. That was the king that he was serving. Here's the thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what does this have to do with what's going on over there right now?
What does it have to do with it? Right. So this little strip of land right here, what do we call that? What was that called? What's that called? The strip of land?
The Gaza Strip?
No, the whole thing. That's Israel. So Judah is there, Israel is there, that's Israel.
Okay.
It was Israel before Nebuchadnezzar took it over. This was originally the land of the Canaanites. This was Canaan. And God gave Canaan, the land of the Canaanites, Perizzites, Hittites, Hivites, all that land. He said to Abram, "This is your land. It's going to be yours and your descendants as an everlasting possession. This is yours forever. It's your land. It is your land." Mm-hmm. You get to keep it forever. He didn't say they'd never be thrown out of their land. He didn't say that no one else was ever going to come in and conquer them while they're in their land. He just said, "This is your land forever." And that did happen. There have been more than... it wasn't just Nebuchadnezzar. There were others who came in and really, really wailed on the Jewish people when they were disobedient to God. And so Nebuchadnezzar and the Chaldeans were just one of them. And so right now, during this time, from 606 to 536 BC, they're in control of the land. But it was still Israel, and that land still belonged to the Jewish people. And God restored it later, after this time was over. Now, we go from 1947, when Israel was again returned to the Jewish people as their nation, 1948. And then what happened? The Arab nations surrounding them tried to take it back, tried to take over. Actually, they weren't really taking it back because it was never really, they didn't really care about it before. It's kind of like a desert, right? But God said, no, this is going to be yours forever. And God gives strict warnings, which we'll get into that next week, about what will happen to those people who go against Israel. What will happen to them? And so Israel is back in Israel, in the land of, it's back in the hands of the Jewish people. And it will remain in their hands, and people can make all kinds of assertions against it. You could say, hey, I'm a Babylonian, and that's my land. No, it's not. I'm a relative of the Canaanites. No, you're not. They're all dead. No, that's my land. No, it's not. God gave it to Israel. It was Israel. It belonged to the Jewish people the moment that God gave it to Abram. And it will be forever, because God said that's their land forever. So, how do we relate that to what's happening today? Well, there are people that are trying once again to kick the Jewish people out of their land, and they won't succeed. But we have to be very, very careful that we don't join with them in heart or in mind, because. Hold on, sorry, I'm trying to find something. I never find this. See, I'm on the show, I'm under the gun.
Well, while you're looking at that, we've got a couple of comments.
Yes, go ahead.
So Jeannie said, if the king threw Daniel in and then took Daniel out right away, then God wouldn't be glorified.
That's true.
Then Marie, 31,000 Palestinians dead, 72% women and kids. I guess I'd have to question that, because are those numbers coming from Palestine?
Yeah, you better question that. Yeah, here's the thing. The Palestinians lie. The people that claim to be, they're Arab, primarily Arab Muslims, because we already established. By the way, prior to the reestablishment of Israel in 1948, there was no such thing as a Palestinian. The only people that would take the name Palestinian were the Arabs referred to the Jews who lived in the regions of Israel as Palestinian Jews. They were called Palestinian Jews. No Arab would take the name Palestinian. They didn't call themselves Palestinians until they lost the first war against the Jewish people when they tried to destroy them. And then the second one, and then they're going, man, we can't win this thing. We got to try a different approach. And so then they took on the name Palestinian. They said, we're Palestinians, and this is our land, and they took it from us, and we need to have it back. So it was a big propaganda campaign, and it's worked actually very well, because people all over the world think that there is such a thing as a Palestinian, and that these people are Palestinians. No, they're Arabs, primarily, and they are descendants of Ishmael. And we read in the scriptures earlier that Jesus said about all of the Ishmaelites, or the Arabs, mm-hmm. That they will be, their hand against everyone and everyone's hand against them.
Yep.
So a violent people, and they'll live in enmity against all their brothers, which is the Jewish people, because they're both Semites, right? They both have Abraham as their father. So, yeah, there's all this. Yeah, tell me all about that. How come, I want to know, Marie, since you sent that in, what are the numbers of dead Jewish women and children and babies? What's that number? How many of them were slaughtered when Hamas came across the Gaza border and started beheading babies? What's that number? I'm just curious. Don't they count? Right. So Gaza, the Gaza Strip, which is a small little strip down here, which was given to the Arabs They said, okay, you can have Gaza. They have all of Gaza. That's Jewish territory. That's part of Israel. They said, okay, you can have it. And you have your own government and your own community. And so for their government, they literally voted in Hamas to run their government. So Hamas, it was Hamas government. That's what the people wanted. So and Hamas's goal was to destroy every Jew in Israel, right? To annihilate them. So if this group of people living in this area appoints as their governing body a group whose total goal is the annihilation of every Jew in the Middle East, why would they think that they can trust men, women, or children who aren't necessarily in the military? They voted them in, mm-hmm. right? I would think that would automatically make them enemies of the nation of Israel because they voted in a government whose goal is the destruction of Israel.
Yeah, but I guess, would you say that maybe not everybody voted for them?
Yeah, and Israel, if you look at the real news, if you don't look at the CNN news or the Palestinian news, if you don't get your news from the Palestinians, Israel goes out of their way to avoid civilian casualties. They go out of their way to avoid civilian casualties.
And why are they, still, all these women and children, why don't they just leave? I mean, if they keep seeing bombs getting dropped, I mean, wouldn't you maybe pack up your bags and go where the bombs aren't?
One of the pictures that I don't have with me today, but I've shown it before, they dropped hundreds of thousands of pamphlets into Gaza, warning the civilians, get out, because we're going to come in and we're going to wipe this place out. So we don't want to hurt you, but we're not going to allow Hamas to destroy us. We're not going to allow this to happen again. So get out. They warned them. They warned them repeatedly. They warned them. They give them every chance, every opportunity that they can. Here's a little known fact. Hamas, years ago, established their headquarters underneath the hospital in Gaza. Mm-hmm. They established their headquarters there. That's where all the bigwigs are. That's where all the bad guys are. Jewish intelligence knew that. The Jewish military knew that they were there. And so they had a choice. They couldn't walk into Gaza, right? Because they've given that whole area, that whole land to those Palestinian people. And they literally kicked the Jewish people out. Jewish families had to leave their homes, leave their houses, leave their property, and get out of Gaza. The Israeli government forced Israeli citizens to leave the Gaza Strip so that the Arabs, who claimed to be Palestinians, could move in and take over. Okay? So they did, and they did that. They left their stuff there, so they got to come in, take their houses, take their stuff. They had these beautiful, beautiful greenhouses that they'd created in Gaza, because Gaza is a place where you can grow all this. They had this massive export of the stuff that they grew in these greenhouses, flowers and all kinds of beautiful stuff. Hamas came in, and they burned it all to the ground. They destroyed it all. Why? That's Jewish stuff. We're not keeping that. So they made it a wasteland again when they took over.
Did you see, also during that State of the Union, Biden's dumbass idea to put a pier up?
No.
Yeah, he wants to put a pier over by, I think it's by Gaza or something, so that they can bring in humanitarian aid, and then they know that it's going into the right hands for the people on the pier. Except, did he think about who they're going to be dropping it off to? And who those people are that are going to be receiving it once it gets off the pier?
Right.
I mean, I don't know if he thought about the back end of this plan.
That's right. So here's one of the things that people don't know, but I've seen footage of this and gotten reports from people who were there. When Israel warned the citizens of Gaza, get out of this area because we're going to go in. We're going to bomb this area. We're going to strike. We're going to, send planes in. We're going to send troops in. Get out. The tanks are rolling in. They're going to be shooting into the building, destroying. Hamas actually sent soldiers to homes to prevent people from leaving their homes. Hamas prevented Palestinians from leaving the area. Why? Why would they do that? And so ask me this question. David, why would they do that?
Why would they do that?
Well, because if they kept the civilians there and Israel comes in, if they bomb, if they have tanks, if they're destroying houses and buildings, what do they have? Civilian casualties. Yep. What does Hamas want? Palestinian civilian casualties. Why would they want that? I thought that was their people. Because they want to be able to blame Israel for crimes against humanity, for war crimes, for being brutal murderers, which is actually what they are. That's why they do it. And so they try to make sure that there are as many casualties. In fact, it's for them, it's a celebration when Palestinian children are killed by Jewish rocket fire or mortars or gunfire or whatever it is, because they've got more ammunition to use in their propaganda against Israel to convince the world that Israel is really the aggressor, that they're the ones that are these barbarians, when in fact it's Hamas who's the barbarians, because Israel has never gone in and slaughtered babies and children the way that Hamas did.
Well, then that's the thing that it just drives me nuts, you know, like when, at the beginning of the show, when we were saying these people that are saying from the river to the sea and they have no idea what it even means. Right. And then they're calling for a ceasefire. Well, it would be over today if Hamas surrendered.
Yeah, it would.
It would be over today.
Right.
You know? Exactly. There's your ceasefire.
Yeah. And one of the founders of Hamas, and there's a video of this. I can bring it next week if you like. And he says Israel has only one option, and that is to destroy Hamas. He said Israel must destroy Hamas completely. They must destroy it completely and entirely, because Hamas will never give up trying to destroy Israel. And the only way to stop that threat is to destroy Hamas completely. So I mentioned the hospital that, you know, the Hamas builds their headquarters under this hospital in Gaza. Why would they do that? Why build their headquarters? Why build the military headquarters underneath a hospital, a civilian hospital? Why?
So they can use them as human shields.
That's exactly it. Israel has only two choices. They can attack Hamas, they can destroy the headquarters and all the bigwigs, all the generals, all the top guys in one strike, and at the same time kill everyone in the hospital, which would then secure the future of Israel for a long period of time. Who knows, 10, 20 years? There's no more Hamas to attack from Gaza. Or they can choose not to attack. And no, it's just a matter of time before Hamas makes another massive attack against Israel. And they had this choice to make several years ago. Guess what Israel decided to do? They decided that they're not going to inflict civilian casualties under the people that were in that hospital or working in the hospital. They did not attack the hospital in order to destroy Hamas headquarters.
Yeah, well,
and they knew that at some point there was going to be another attack from Hamas, from Gaza, and we just saw that in October.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if people are saying that Israel is, you know, committing genocide over there, well, if that were the case, I think that they would just have, you know, dropped all the bombs all at once
on Hamas before there was even an attack. Why would they wait for Hamas to attack Israel from Gaza? They just get everybody in Gaza, know that Hamas is there, and then just bomb it all.
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right, Paul. If that was their goal, hey, come on in. Yeah, we're going to get our guys out of Gaza. We're going to leave Gaza, and you can all live there. That can be your place. Oh, look, they're voting in Hamas to be their government. Good. What, did they finish the vote? Yeah. Okay, are the planes ready? Yeah, go now, go. Bomb everything. Kill everybody. Kill all of them there. Oh, wait, that's not even genocide because there are other so-called Palestinians all over in all kinds of other places in the Middle East. It's not just in Gaza. But yeah, you're right. They didn't do that. They didn't do that. No, they didn't attack until they were attacked. And they knew that they would be attacked. And the reason they didn't attack first was because in Israel, they have they understand that human life is sacred, even if it's the life of their enemy. You know, Golda Meir years ago, in my lifetime, was the prime minister of Israel. And at that time, she was fighting against the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization under Yasser Arafat. And she made a statement that I think is very telling of the Jewish mindset in this regard. And she said, and this is a quote, she said to the Palestinian Arabs, she said, "We can forgive you," this to Marie's point, she said, "We can forgive you for killing our children. What we cannot ever forgive is you forcing us to kill your children."
Mm-hmm. You know, and if there was like a world peace, you know, something like this happened, something that would be nice is if you could just have so many boots on the ground over there that they just have a lookout in every corner and you just starve them to death. Because once they finally have to come out of their hole to eat, you got them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that only they've got tunnels, so that makes it harder.
Well, right? That's why you need a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, so that problem is not going to go away. I can tell you right now, not because I have a crystal ball, but because I have the Bible, that a day is coming when I was going to look something up. A day is coming when there will be literally every nation on the earth. Every nation on the earth will attack Israel.
Even us?
Even us. If we're still there. If we're still there. I mean, will we still be there? I don't know. I kind of, part of me hopes so and part of me hopes not, because I don't want to be part of a nation that attacks Israel.
Are you looking for something there?
I am looking for something. Hey, I think
while
I
you're doing that,
yeah,
why don't we get a word from our friends over at Redemption Shield?
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%.
Yeah, and so Redemption Shield, if you want to order today, at the gfbestsource.com website, just scroll to the bottom of the homepage. You'll see the shield. You can just click on it, and that'll take you right to them to get that discount. Also on our website, for anybody that's wondering, we would like you to follow us on Rumble, because that's the platform that you should be on, and we do have a link to Rumble. If you do not have a Rumble account, follow us on Rumble.
Rumble's a great platform for getting the truth. A lot of people publish on Rumble that can't get published anywhere else.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I mentioned to you that I see a lot of people doing, like Russell Brand and Louder with Crowder and all them, is they'll have the first 15 minutes of their show on YouTube and Facebook and everything, and then they say, "All right, everybody, now get over to Rumble to get the real content."
Yeah, and we've been doing that here for, what, a couple of years?
Well, we haven't been doing the 15-minute thing.
No, not...
We should start doing it.
But I thought that we did that like a couple of years ago. We did. Yeah. We say after the first 10 minutes or so, then we said, now we're going to switch on over to...
Yeah. I think we just kind of fell off the wagon on that one.
Yeah, we did. But I think we did before they did.
Yeah.
Well, you did. I mean, yeah. So this is the end of Amos chapter 9. This is kind of the history of Israel and their relationship with God in a nutshell. Okay, he says, there's going to be a lot packed into a very short space right here. So try to keep up. It's going to go really quick. "O sons of Israel," declares the Lord, "have I not brought up Israel from the land of Egypt and the Philistines from Kaphtor and the Arameans from Kir? Behold, the eyes of the Lord are on the sinful kingdom." And when he says the sinful kingdom, he's actually referring He's referring to Israel. He's referring to Judah at that point. He's referring to his people, the sinful kingdom, because they've rebelled against him again. He says, and I will destroy it from the face of the earth. And all the Palestinians are going, yeah, God's going to destroy it from the face of the earth. Hold on. Nevertheless, I will not totally destroy the house of Jacob, declares the Lord. For behold, I am commanding, and I will shake the house of Israel among all nations as grain is shaken in a sieve, but not a kernel will fall to the ground. All the sinners of my people, that's the Jewish people, will die by the sword. Those who say the calamity will not overtake us or confront us, those are the same people who never listened to his prophets, who always rejected whatever the prophets told them. Whenever they were warned, they said, no, there's not going to be calamity against us. God's saying, no, that's going to happen. But then listen to this. In that day, I will raise up the fallen booth of David and wall up its breaches, the holes that are made in it. I will also raise up its ruins and rebuild it as in the days of old.
Wait a minute. You mean Israel's going to make a comeback?
Yeah, God is going to bring it back. He's going to rebuild it. He says, as in the days of old, that they may possess the remnant of Edom. That means that the land is expanding and growing, the land of Israel. The remnant of Edom. Oh, my. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when the plowman will overtake the reaper and the treader of grapes, him who sows seeds. It's going to be a very plentiful, bountiful time. When the mountains will drip sweet wine. By the way, when it says sweet wine, that's unfermented. That's the grape juice when it's really sweet, like right out of the first draw, right off the press. And all the hills will be dissolved. Also, I will restore the captivity of my people Israel, and they will rebuild the ruined cities and live in them. They will also plant vineyards and drink their wine and make gardens and eat their fruit. Here's the final verse. This is something that, look, you know, you don't have to love the Jewish people. You can hate them. You can hate Israel. You can hate the land of Israel. You can shout from the river to the sea all day long. You can hope for their destruction. But here's the way that it's going to end for Israel. Here's the ending right here. This is God speaking. Just keep this in mind. I will also plant them on their land, and they will not again be rooted out from their land, which I have given them, says the Lord your God.
There you go.
There it is. That's the end of the story, folks. That's the way that it's going to end up. God said it, God meant it, and God will do it. So whatever side of the fence, whatever side of the equation you find yourself on, this Israeli, Hamas, whatever conflict, that's the way it's going to end up for the people of God, the people of Israel.
All right. Well, what you got in store for us next week?
Oh, next week is going to be really good because we're going to be looking at the at something that's even more germane to what's happening today, and that is the celebration of Purim, which, who knows what that is? Raise your hand if you've ever heard of Purim. Purim. Oh, good. Dale knows Purim. Yeah, that's the celebration that's going to take place in a couple of weeks, and we're going to lead up to that because it's a very special time. It has something to do with the destruction of Israel.
All right. Well, looking forward to it.
Okay.
All right, everybody. So that wraps up our episode today. And that was Nobody Forgets What They Don't Know. We'll have John here back next week. Thank our sponsors. We've got Churchill Shoes, Over Heaven's Cakes, and remember to order that Redemption Shield. Coming up at 1, we got City Chatter. And then, let's see, what else we got going on here? Just make sure to like, follow, share, and tag us. All right, everybody. Take her easy.